happen, but newspress.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10 and Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Deckers, makers of Uggs and Tevas, Pierre LaFon, Wendy Foster, offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines, Montecito Bank and Trust, proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years, Habitat for Humanity, building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter, and CSU Channel Islands. No matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And speaking of CSU Channel Islands, today we have Jill Liefsted, the Executive Director of Teaching and Learning Innovations, and a senior academic in the technology office at CSU Channel Islands. Good afternoon.
Hello.
So, it took so long to give your title. I think that's about all the time we have. It's so long and complicated. Could you just give us a little rundown on what you do?
Yes, they just kept adding words to the title. So I manage our academic technology and a team of instructional designers that support faculty in improving their instruction and their teaching and learning. A big part of that is doing faculty development, which is teaching professors how to teach and how to create new experimental innovative strategies to reach our students and help them be successful and graduate on time.
As a former teacher at Santa Barbara City College, I can tell you all the teachers just love advice about how to teach, don't they? Everyone welcomes you into their room.
Everyone. Now, we walk a fine line, lots of respect for what people are currently doing, and gentle nudges. I think right now we're seeing faculty understand that the world is changing and that technology is playing a role and that everybody's walking around with a computer in their pocket. And so people are a little more open now than I think they have been in the past to looking for new ways.
Now, putting technology aside for a moment, there are teachers that can actually perform and provide a atmosphere that keeps people awake, and there are those that kind of drone on. So is there a way to, without the technology part, is there a way to help teachers who maybe are good researchers or academics in the quiet of the library but aren't necessarily inspiring speakers?
Yes. I mean, I've been in teacher preparation for years, so we go back to a lot of the same skills that we use with our K-12 teachers and how to engage students and how to set up a lesson. The biggest thing that we tell people is know what you want your students to get out of it. And when you put that front and center, then suddenly people start to think about, what is it that I'm doing that's going to lead students to get where they want to go? We work with our faculty to do a lot of what's called active learning, which is getting students to talk and be engaged and move away from the lectures, because there's a few good lectures out there, but they're few and far between. It gets difficult to talk and be engaging for an hour. So we want the students talking to each other. We want them asking questions. We want them engaging with the information.
And you teach teaching throughout the entire system. And so you need to have some insight into almost every subject then. Because if the first step is to know what you need to learn, you really need to help them do that.
So I rely on our faculty to be the content area experts. They have their PhDs. They truly know their topic area. What I bring to the table and people in my position is how to teach, which is a science unto itself. And there's lots of theories of learning, and there's theories of learning that cross content areas. And so that's what I can bring to the table as part of the conversation. It's a two-way street. There's techniques that anybody can apply to any content, but there's also techniques that work for specific content. So we can't deny what the faculty bring to the table, but there's always always a technique that can be used to help that be more engaging for students.
Are you on your own? Is there anyone else in your department doing this?
No, I have a fabulous team.
Oh.
So first of all, there's a lot of efforts on campus to support our faculty becoming teachers. So we have a series of Hispanic Serving Institution grants that are focused on improving student outcomes through supporting faculty. So there's efforts to help teachers learn about active learning strategies. And then we also have three instructional designers, instructional technologists that work with faculty not only on the teaching, but how to combine the teaching with the technology. And so they're available also. But it's a joint effort. It's also an evolving effort on our campus, not something that has been given a whole lot of priority or focus priority, I guess. And now we're really moving that direction.
Which is great. And one of the first times I heard Dr. Beck speak was she talked about how there are very good institutions in the area like UCSB, which is really a Class A research institution, but CSU is a teaching institution. And I think that having people like you is putting some resources behind that endeavor.
Most definitely. Channel Islands is focused on teaching. It's a priority. Every faculty member that's interviewed is looked at as a teacher first and a scholar. We call it being a teacher-scholar model. So it is a priority from the top down. We want our students to have the best. We have smaller class sizes, high faculty-student engagement and interaction. So it is most definitely a priority at Channel Islands.
You know, when you talk to people in the education field, and if you look at the newspapers over the last few years, everyone's looking for the magic bullet. That is, results are disappointing across the country, to say the least, whether it's, you know, K through 12 or in the community colleges. The ranking of our school system is like in the middle of the international ranking system, and everyone's looking for some solution. And it seems to me what you're touching on here is probably one of the most important things, which is having people that can communicate to people, to kids who actually are communicating with themselves in a different way than we did as kids.
Yes. I mean, I'll back up and say I think the United States is doing a pretty good job in education, and I think we get a bad rap. If we break apart the students and look at different groups of students, our students that have some privilege behind them are being very successful in our school system. So I want to start with that. But there are groups that are struggling, and we have to look, when we look internationally, at how the different groups perform as compared. Teaching matters, and that's something that is really important. The people involved in teaching matter. So there have been quite a few efforts to automatize teaching, to remove the teacher from the experience. And what we keep learning over and over again is that the human matters, and that connection that you make with the student matters more than anything else, especially for students that are coming from less privileged backgrounds. That connection with the individual that's in that teacher seat, be it a professor or a high school teacher, matters more than almost anything else.
So how is that consistent, those last three sentences, consistent with the initiative at CSU CI of online education?
Great question. So online education can be humanized. We are finding that through online education, students connect more with each other and with their faculty member than they do in a large class. So if you imagine being in an auditorium with 100 students, there's not much opportunity to talk to each other. If you are in an online environment that is built for connections and interactions, so that you are using video, you're using voice, and you're requiring the students to interact, the students come out reporting that they have got to know each other and they feel more of a connection with their faculty member than they do in a large lecture classroom. So online learning has had a reputation of being text-based and not focused on the students, but just one way. And that's not how we're doing online education at Channel Islands. We are doing it where the faculty and the students are engaged. There's a high level of communication, interaction, and presence.
Emotional intelligence, I've always felt, is a really important characteristic if you're going to be successful in the world. And one of the ways that you can develop emotional intelligence is through communication skills. And so my concern has always been when I looked at online learning is you miss, even if it's, you know, 30 or 40 people in the same room, at least you were able to communicate and listen to other people and pick up on their way they talk, the way they make movements. When I got my MBA, the biggest part of the MBA program was just talking to other people and having, you know, little breakout groups. And how do you deal with that, what would seem to be a loss through an online system?
So, complex question there. We're living in a world, if I look at my 13-year-old now and look at how he communicates with friends, he has to develop these online communication skills. He's communicating with his teachers via text messages and different systems, with his friends and text messages and social media. So it's a different way of communicating, but it's just as valuable. And those skills are needed also. You do lose some of the face-to-face interactions and some of those hints, shall we say, cues. However, there are different ones that are going on. So learning, teaching students netiquette, how to behave and interact in the online environment, the difference between being casual and social versus being formal in a class setting or interacting, you know, with a professor or classmate you don't know well. It's just a whole different set of skills.
When we come back from our break, we're going to talk about a word I've never heard before, netiquette. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and Santa Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
For more than 20 years now, the unique landscape and people of the Santa Barbara community have helped grow Deckers brands into the lifestyle footwear leaders they are today. Newly opened at their headquarters in Goleta, the Deckers brand showcase allows you to explore and shop the UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands while you're likely to discover something new or potentially receive an in-store special offer. At 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta, the showcase is open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 Monday through Saturday and 11 to 5 on Sunday.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers, in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social emotional learning and character building to help teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here with Jill Liefsted, the Executive Director of Teaching and Learning Innovations and a Senior Academic Technology Officer at CSU Channel Islands. And we were talking about netiquette. Netiquette is a state north of New York? No. What is netiquette?
Netiquette is how you behave online, and it's learning, much like etiquette in person, how to be a polite person and respond to people politely, clearly, knowing the difference between that casual, I'm sending a quick text message to a friend, versus that same quick message that you're posting on a social media site that's going to be seen by everybody, versus sending a message to your professor through a school-based system. So we try to teach our students about how to communicate and how to see the differences online, just like you would communicating face-to-face with a professor versus running into a friend at the coffee shop.
So for I'm not sure exactly of the demographics of the listeners of this station, but I suppose it's not under 20. So if I remember the little bit of online teaching I was exposed to, is there a little box up on the top that you can communicate to the teacher while the lecture, while the session's going on? Are there boxes that you can talk to another student? I mean, how do you have side conversations, or can you?
So that varies completely by the teacher and what technology they're using. So we do see some faculty use Twitter to have what's called a back channel conversation. So they can have a conversation going. The students are tagging, you know, their posts to allow people to communicate about what the class is talking about. We have other technologies that allow people to send quick messages to each other or to have more in-depth discussions, but they're what we call asynchronous, and that's where most of our communication takes place. So it's not in real time, but you post something, and then when that person has time to get to it, they can come back and respond.
Can someone who is able to and enjoys this type of learning just get a degree with only online courses?
Not at Cal State Channel Islands. There are plenty throughout the nation of fully online degrees, but Cal State Channel Islands is dedicated to providing choice in the modality of classes. So we are a place-based campus. We want our students coming to campus. We serve mostly our local area, but a lot of our students work. A lot of our students have children, they have elder care needs, and they can't get to campus 5 days a week. And so if they're taking four classes, maybe one of them will be online. And so they're getting that opportunity to learn in a different way. They're also able to finish, take the number of classes they need to graduate and still keep their life going.
And professors have a choice to use this, or is it mandatory?
No, at this point, it's a discussion between the program chairs and the faculty. Some courses are offered exclusively online, and some are up to the faculty member if they'd like to try to teach it online. We don't have any strict policies about it at this point.
And is there are there courses where have both, so that part of the course is online, part of the course is lecture or meeting?
Yes. So we have fully online classes that don't meet in person, and then the traditional classes. We also have blended classes where students will come. So instead of coming 2 days a week, they'll come to campus 1 day a week, and the rest of the class is online. So we have a little bit of everything.
So I asked about one definition. Now let me ask another definition. What's untethering mean?
So untethering is a word that we use to describe how we're supporting our faculty. What we learned with students about how they don't have a lot of time to be in a given place at a given time to learn, we also saw the same in our faculty. So expecting faculty to show up for a workshop on Wednesday at 10 o'clock is just not realistic. Some will be there, but some won't. So we found that we need to provide alternative ways for faculty to get information about how to teach and how to use the latest technology. So we take an approach that we call untethering, which means that we offer in-person workshops. We also offer the opportunity for people to attend via video conference. We record those. We write blog posts to describe what's going on, and we build resources online. So we have a little bit of a recipe about untethering so that your faculty, everyone from the person who runs a business and teaches one class for us on Saturdays to the full-time faculty member that's on campus 5 days a week, is able to access the information and benefit from the resources.
So I guess we're going to continue on with this dictionary work.
Sorry about that.
The two words I'm going to ask about, I understand each word separately, but I don't understand them together. This is on your internet. Internet problems with online proctoring. What's online proctoring?
Online proctoring. So as we move into the world of online, one of the biggest concerns people have is cheating. Now, quite frankly, that's one of the biggest concerns people have when they give an exam in person also. But in the online environment, you know that a student is at home. They likely have a significant other nearby. They have their children, their dogs. They have everybody, as well as the entirety of the world's knowledge at their fingertips. So cheating if you're just giving a traditional test is there. There are companies out there that have set up systems that monitor you while you're on your computer. So they use that little webcam to watch you while you take an exam. So just like you can go online and figure out how to cheat in person, if you search any of these companies, people have found ways around these monitors or what these companies are doing. So online proctoring basically is attempting to proctor when somebody's sitting at home taking an exam. My personal position is that we should find different ways to assess learning rather than just doing a test, and that we should take into account everything that we know students have access to when they're at home and they're online, and build assessments where we know they're going to use those resources. But there's a large growing industry of online proctoring tools.
My favorite cheating story when I was teaching was I used to give a final exam where I gave the exam to the students the week before. And I said, you know, in the real world, you get to think about problems. So here's the exam. It's essays. Do whatever you want to do, but come in with just a blue book. You can't bring notes in. And once I caught a kid cheating, and I'm thinking, how lazy, and how do you know how to cheat if you couldn't do it at home? To me, cheating is not the real issue. You're cheating yourself, because the benefit of an education isn't a diploma after the first job. It's what you learn, how you think.
Yes.
So you talked about how wonderful this is. What are the negatives?
Of online education?
Yeah.
Well, you know, we're still in the early stages of really figuring out all of that's going on in online education. I think there are lots of risks for fully online programs. I think they meet the needs of a certain population of more self-driven students. So our students that need more support to get through and they need more hands-on mentoring, I think, do better at a campus like ours, where we provide on the ground the traditional college experience, but we're also providing choices during the semester for them to take online classes. So I think right now that is the best model possible to support students getting through the college experience. However, there is a place for fully online programs as well, because there's a population of people that cannot go back to school. They cannot get to a college campus. So I see more opportunities than I do risks. I look at, you know, middle schoolers to see where we're going, and I watch how they learn and how they use resources. And I just don't think we can ignore the fact that learning online is happening. Last summer, my son took Spanish. His tutor lived in Guatemala. They met every day for an hour via Skype, and it was great. He learned a ton. And that wasn't possible when I was a kid. So I see it as an opportunity. I don't see a whole lot of risks.
And he could drink the water, your son, because
exactly.
He was here. just thinking about what you do, you really need to have constant update of information flows, because you, in order to do what you do, you have to be learning all the time, because the technology is changing. Every as we speak, it's probably whatever you have is obsolete. So there's a lot of learning as part of your job, not just teaching.
Yes, there's a ton of learning. Luckily, there's a very engaged community, and social media allows us to communicate a ton. There are a lot of people that are blogging about the technologies and the advances in education and the general changes about higher education. So there's a very rich international community that's looking into these issues that I stay connected to.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station, and we'll be right back.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and Santa Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Available only at the company's headquarters in Goleta, the new Deckers brand showcase features the latest footwear from UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands. You're invited to stop by to experience firsthand what makes Deckers brand so unique. Discover new product and try on a range of offerings from your favorite Deckers brand at their retail stores. Now open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday and from 11 to 5 on Sunday at 250 Coramar Drive in Goleta.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, improving attitude, creating social harmony, helping the achievement gap for teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here with Jill Leifsted, the Executive Director of Teaching and Learning Innovations and a Senior Academic Technology Officer at CSU Channel Islands. And let's step back. We've been talking about what you do. Let's talk about how you got there. So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Long Beach, California.
As soon as you were 5-6 years old, you said, what I need to do is become a technology expert and teach learning?
No.
What happened? So you gave a very short answer to Long Beach. That didn't tell me much, unless you were a surfer.
No, not a surfer. My journey has been interesting. My mom was a teacher, and as I was growing up, she worked for the Blind Children's Center. And that inspired me a lot. And I had a friend in elementary school that was blind, and I got to be her assistant. And I was very intrigued by that. So I had a real interest in disabilities from a young age. My dad had a passion for computers. So throughout my upbringing, I was one of the first to take a computer to school. Most of my people didn't have their own computers. So those two went along. I was graduating from UC Santa Barbara with a degree in psychology, and not real certain what I wanted to do. So my mom said, why don't you get your teaching credential? I thought, okay. I'd taken a class on autism, and I was like, maybe special education would work. I had a wonderful mentor at UCSB, Dr. Michael Gerber, in special education. I ended up getting my credential, loving it. And we worked on, I taught middle school special education. Then I went back to UCSB for my graduate degree. And during that time, we built online modules to prepare teachers to teach. And it was really the beginning of thinking about how people learn in the online environment. And it really inspired me. So I then got a job at Cal State Channel Islands and helped to build the special ed credential program and develop the School of Education. All along exploring technology and kind of being that voice in the back of the corner saying, hey, aren't we doing more about technology around here? I heard we were supposed to be on the forefront of online learning. So as the campus got developed, we then had an opportunity to develop this area. And our provost at the time asked me to participate. And our CIO and our vice president for technology, Michael Berman, was there and became a mentor to me in this area. And we went from there. We started with a small group of faculty to explore blended learning. We asked them if they were willing to take the risk.
Blended learning is?
To put part of your class online and keep part of it face-to-face. So we had this group of 10 faculty that were willing to see what this was all about. We together learned about the technology. We asked campus for resources. They gave them. And it's developed from there. That was about 5 years ago. So 2 years ago, Michael Berman created this position, which was an administrative position to oversee a team of people focused on improving teaching and learning and the use of technology on our campus.
And one of the things, as a special education teacher, you obviously had intrinsically, or you developed, is a great deal of patience, which must help you dealing with the professors at the school.
Do I have to answer that?
No. Do you enjoy being both at let me ask you this. Do you get into the classroom, or are you just doing administrative stuff? I don't mean just, but...
Yeah. Well, it feels like just sometimes. I, in my heart and soul, am a teacher. I love teaching. I have not taught in the last year, so I hope to get back into the classroom soon. I think it keeps me fresh and knowing what I'm doing and keeping the realities of what it takes to teach in perspective. But in getting our team and the resources and everything else up and running, I haven't been able to be in the classroom last year.
And you mentioned that your husband is a teacher as well, so yes. You must have incredible dinner conversations.
He is also a special education teacher. Yeah. So yes, we have fascinating conversations about how people learn. And I like to say we're both very curious about how to get people to where they want to go and how to problem solve through the different ways the brain works.
And, you know, the one of the things that neurobiology is telling us, which, you know, was obvious intuitively, but now we're getting real scientific data that people really do learn differently. It's not just people, you know, that have certain small learning disabilities, just people learn differently, and you need to be able to accommodate that.
Yes. I mean, throughout my doctoral training and on, we've talked about individual differences. And rather than approaching life and looking at disabilities, we just look at the fact that everybody learns differently. And if you look at needing to meet all those needs, if you want all of your learners to learn, you recognize there's not one way to approach that. So some people's differences are greater than others, but there's no two people that approach a problem exactly the same.
And we throw so many kids away. I remember when my son, my older son, was in the second grade, he was unable to read at all. And the teachers told us in conference that maybe one day he can be a baseball player because he's a good athlete, or maybe even work at a pizza place. Anyway, he has his law degree from Georgetown. And, you know, when they figured out that he had learning disabilities and how to be taught differently, then we were able, at a different school, to accommodate those needs. And, you know, there are people that don't have the benefit of parents that had the resources to do that, and, you know, they're probably working at a pizza place. Not to say anything's wrong with, I like pizza as much as the next person, but still, there are better, more economic ways. So speaking of economics, we talked about the benefit of digital learning for students and for teachers. What about for the university? Are there cost benefits? That seems to me obvious, that you can deliver education at a unit price that's very effective.
Yeah, so the cost benefits, I need to be clear, they don't come from faculty needing to spend less time at all. I think online learning takes more time from the teacher, and therefore they need more resources to move forward. However, there is money that can be saved in just daily operating expenses. So you can offer more classes, and you don't have to have more buildings. Students can save money. They don't have to pay for parking every day. They don't have to have commuting costs. So there are extraneous costs, but I think a lot of people think, oh, we can do online learning and pay faculty less because they don't have to be somewhere. And that's a huge misconception, because it is more work for faculty to move a class online than it is to teach face-to-face.
At City College a few years ago, there was an increase in funding to provide for the library to be open on weekends, and the thought was that there'd be a few people there, and there were hundreds and hundreds of students using the library, and what we discovered is a lot of kids didn't have computers. So how do you deal with the economic pressures that someone may not have the high-speed internet or a computer that can keep up with the new technology?
Yeah, so that's a complex problem that's getting less complex as students have access to more and more technology. We did a couple surveys at the beginning of last year in a few of our large classes, and every student in the class had a smartphone and had access to a computer that had internet access somewhere. So not all of our students do. We do have a lot of students that don't have access to computers. We do have it at the library. I would like to see us replace textbooks costs and say we're not going to need to pay for textbooks, but you will need a computer with internet access. We'll provide you internet access on campus, right? You can be on any. We have internet access anywhere on our campus. So the problem is getting smaller. We also approach it with having mobile access. So our online course materials are now in an application called Canvas that students can get to just about everything and respond and do their assignments on their phone. Now, for those of us that our eyes are not as great and we're not used to that,
and our fingers are too big.
And our fingers are too big. Students can do an amazing amount of work on their phones.
Yeah, and unfortunately, when I taught, there were sometimes students in the back doing that in the back of the room, even though that wasn't part of the course. Maybe it was just me.
No, it's not just you. They do that. But quite frankly, when I'm not engaged, I do that as well. So.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I think we'll take a break. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and San Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Founded by a UCSB grad, Deckers Brands has grown into a global driver of lifestyle footwear from humble beginnings in 1973. Santa Barbara has been a key element of the business, defining the company's culture, providing home base for many employees, and inspiring product innovation each year. For a first-hand experience, stop by the Deckers Brands headquarters in Goleta, 250 Coromar Drive, from 10 to 7, Monday through Saturday, 11 to 5 Sunday, and shop their new brand showcase retail test lab. Guaranteed, you'll see a new side to Deckers' portfolio, from footwear to handbags to home furnishings.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here with Jill Liestead, the Executive Director of Teaching and Learning Innovations and a Senior Academic Technology Officer at CSU Channel Islands. I remember when about 20 years ago, when my company was bought out and I became part of a big company, there was a senior executive who had a title CIO. And I have an MBA, and I said, I never heard of the word CIO. He said, what's a new title? It's called Chief Information Officer. So, and now obviously that's a title that everyone who's in that position has. So, a senior academic technology officer, is that a title that you guys made up, or is that a national title that other people have?
It is a title that other people have. There's a few other senior academic technology officers within the Cal State system and across the nation. As the technology, educational technology has advanced, the need to integrate technology into the classroom and into teaching learning has taken a more prominent role. And so people that have been in this role have been promoted into more senior level administrative positions.
And the other title, Director of Teaching and Learning Innovations, that's independent of the technology aspect?
Yes.
So you have two hats.
I do have two hats. They are very complementary of each other. We don't want them to be separated. The teaching and learning comes first. The technology is there to support the student learning. It's not there to be front and center. So we want the technology to almost fade into the background and to be a play a supportive role. And we think about the students, the teachers, and the learning first.
So that leads me into a question that I've been thinking about, and that is, what if you have a really good professor who just doesn't get it? How do you figure out a solution, or do you just say, you know what, you don't have to do this?
You know, if the students are learning, we're good. So it's up to the program chairs, the department chairs, to decide how courses are offered and what the learning outcomes are for a student getting a degree from that program, and to partner the professor with the class. So say a communications degree. There's a role in communications where students need to know online communications. And the professors teaching those classes that are meeting those objectives need to have those skills. But there's also a lot going on in communications where they don't necessarily have to have the technology skills. So it's really up to the program chairs to match the professor's skills and needs with the learning needs of the students and the learning outcomes.
You know, I imagine that there are different courses have a different amount of applicability to online teaching. And it seems to me, ironically, one of the most difficult courses to teach online would be communications, which is so, you know, ironic. How do you teach communications if you're not looking at the person?
Well, like, you know, as I said, there's a lot of communication taking place right now where people are not together, and it's taking place not in a synchronous environment. It's taking place over different amounts of time. And I think that's really important for people to understand and to be able to communicate in that way. If we take Twitter, for example, if you're going to be using Twitter in a professional way, that is a communication skill. And companies are hiring people with communications degrees to do their social media.
Would you give a scholarship to the president to improve his Twitter skills?
Do I?
I mean, I don't know.
I'm just thinking out loud.
give us a heads up. What's going to be new? You know, new is used to be every 10 years. You know, I forgot what that technologist said. Everything doubles every whatever technology. But things are changing so quickly that there may be something new by next semester. What could we look forward to?
Well, I think rather than looking for a specific tool or trick that's going to be new, I think what we're going to see is a change in how people communicate. And there's a project called Project Tomorrow that looks at middle school students to let higher ed know who's coming, right? Because they're 5 years out. And if we look at these middle schoolers, we really are looking at a generation of kids that are connected. They're past what we used to call the digital era, right? The digital era was, oh, we've just got this new iPhone and everybody has a smartphone in their pocket and everyone has internet. We're past that. They don't know life without that. But what they are teaching us is how they're connected with the world. We looked at water bottle flipping, which was a huge fad a couple months ago. Kids would put half, you know, fill up a water bottle halfway and flip them, and they would see if they could land them somewhere. My boss was going to China to give a talk, and we started looking at that, and we're like, we wonder if this is a worldwide phenomenon. And we looked at YouTube and could find videos of kids flipping water bottles around the world within a month period. And then it died. It's just gone. People don't flip water bottles anymore. So that's the change that I think is relevant. The way that things can spread, kids are connected globally more so than they're even connected to generations at home. So that to me is the change that I'm most interested in, is how is this technology going to change how we function and how we communicate across the globe?
I just wish they were connected to the right things. One of the problems that de Tocqueville said in the 1800s was that the problem with American democracy is going to be a non-educated electorate. And it's one thing to be astute at looking at Twitter and the internet. It's another thing to pick the right things to look at. And, you know, if you look at what people read, there was an incredible interview between a left and a right-wing group and what they read. And none of them right. on the right read the New York Times or the Washington Post, and on the left, they watched Fox. And so, you know, one of the challenges I would imagine for these middle schoolers coming up is not to teach them how to use technology. They probably know better than we do. But to know what to look for and to know what you require to become a Renaissance person, if that's relevant anymore.
I think it's never been more important to teach critical thinking skills and to teach students how to compare different sources of information and draw conclusions and understand that their own personal bias, what they're entering into the environment with, where their background places them in the conversation. There's never been a more important time. And that takes place with or without technology. But that's as people are connected around the globe, what they're connected with and what they do with that information is very important.
Do you think that the disaster of for-profit schools and the online learning methods that they used, which I'm sure are not anywhere near what you do, has given online learning a bad rap?
Yes and no. I mean, I think we just need to look at learning, right? The early days, the technology that we used was quite simplistic, and it really was based on text. You could type and you could respond to type. We have come so far in the technology. You know, our faculty and students have video conferencing tools. They're able to leave video messages for each other. They can record, you know, something on a whiteboard real quick and teach somebody else something. So the early days of online learning, I think, were complicated by the for-profit piece and also the fact that the technology had not quite caught up with the concepts.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and San Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
More than 20 years now, the unique landscape and people of the Santa Barbara community have helped grow Deckers brands into the lifestyle footwear leaders they are today. Newly opened at their headquarters in Goleta, the Deckers brand showcase allows you to explore and shop the UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ah New brands while you're likely to discover something new or potentially receive an in-store special offer. At 250 Coramore Drive in Goleta, the showcase is open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 Monday through Saturday and 11 to 5 on Sunday.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers, in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. I'm Neil Kreisel, and I'm here with Jill Leifsted, the Executive Director of Teaching and Learning Innovations and Senior Academic Technology Officer at CSU Channel Islands. And I really believe you need to have, make these like, what do you call it when you put a bunch of letters together to represent a word?
What is it? The title, acronym.
You need an acronym.
So the senior academic that can be SATO.
So we're here today with Jill Liestad, a SATOist? You're a SATOist? This is a whole new show. A SATOist. So you mentioned your parents as inspirational, but I know from my own experience on Wall Street that you need mentors. And who are your mentors?
So, you know, I feel like I've been lucky to have many mentors. But my very first mentor that really had an impact on the direction of my career was Dr. Michael Gerber, who's at just recently retired from UC Santa Barbara. I met him, I think, when I was 19, took a class from him, and quite frankly, I didn't understand a word he said. And I sat in the class, and I thought, I want to be able to do that someday. He was talking about learning disabilities and inspired me.
So you wanted to be able to teach a class that no one understood a word you said. Is that what you're saying?
I wanted to be that smart, was what... I laugh when I look back on it now, but yeah. And then my current boss is also an incredible mentor to me, and also another Michael, Michael Berman. And he has really opened my eyes to the importance of higher education and the role of technology and being willing to step outside of the box and take risks. He often sends me little messages to, you know, ask for permission or ask for forgiveness, not permission, things like that, that really have allowed me to take risks in this role and be successful.
There was a book called, it was about Israel, why Israel has more startups than any other country per capita. And, you know, the one of the key things they were able to isolate is that there is no penalty for failure. The whole idea is just give it a try it. And speaking of trying it, what are your career goals? You're very young, and you already run half the school, is what you told me during the break. So what are you going to do to keep interested?
Well, you know, I love what I'm doing right now. I feel so fortunate to be at Channel Islands. I have been there since 2002, the first year we had students, and watched the campus grow. It's a fabulous campus. I believe in our mission of creating access for students to get a college degree. We have extraordinarily committed faculty. And if this job keeps being interesting and exciting, I can just see continuing to grow in this job. But who knows? I'm somebody that likes to find opportunities and take them. I know that I will eventually end up back in the classroom, and whether that's back in a middle school classroom or back in the college classroom, I don't know. But I know that before I say I'm all done working, I'll be a teacher again.
So this is a little bit of a self-serving question, but it seems to me what you're doing is really unique and innovative. But is there something going on in every school, or are you way ahead of the curve here?
There's something going on everywhere. People are thinking about change in higher education. But I do think that we are ahead of the curve in taking risks within state colleges, state universities. I think we've been given permission and resources to take risks where other people have gotten or been told no.
Well, Jill, this has been really terrific. And I think there's no question that everyone should rip up their applications to all the schools in the area or any area and go to CSU Channel Islands.
I agree with you.
No arguments there.
No, it's a great campus.
Yeah, well, what you do sounds wonderful, and is it too late for me to go
no,
to school?
No, come on back.
Can I go back?
We take everybody, all ages.
If you already have a degree, do you get a discount or no?
No.
Okay, well,
I think it's the opposite.
Well, thank you so much for being here. This has been AHA Presents About Education, and we'll be right back here next week at the same time.
I'm
It's